Positive Perspective, one of the most interesting hours in radio, where we shine the positive light of Jesus Christ on the scriptures, music, our communities, and world issues. We're broadcasting live from Skid Row Studios in beautiful downtown Los Angeles.
Hi, I'm Willis Boyd.
And I'm Denise Boyd. And you're listening to Positive Perspectives.
Okay, in studio tonight we have Brad Samuels and a very familiar face around here is Melvin Ishmael Johnson. We got a whole bunch of biblical names going on over there across the room, right? And we have Lee. Hey, Lee.
I don't believe that's biblical.
Oh, you don't?
Lee?
No, you choose enough. Samuels and Ishmael, he played a very, very small part, but today is a bigger part. Okay, I got something I'm going to get off my chest very briefly, and it's got something to do with the police-involved shootings. The thing that just happened, what is that, North Carolina, that whole thing, it's craziness, and I don't know a lot of details about it. Don't really want to get into it right now, but it is very sad when a police shoots a man in the back running away from him like that. Even if the guy's a hardened criminal, you have backup coming, stick the dogs on him, do whatever.
I believe he was accused of not paying child support.
Yeah, but Denise was telling me something about the car maybe being stolen, and I don't know if she just kind of...
Well, they were checking it out. I mean, he was pulled over for a broken taillight.
And see, to me, that's probably, a lot of that's probably just harassment, too. But when you shoot a man in the back like that, that's running away, I mean, he's not a threat to you, obviously. And it's sad. And then I saw another thing, a mentally ill man in Texas, Dallas, Texas, I think it was, had a screwdriver. And the mother called because he wasn't taking his medication, called the police to come and help her take him to the hospital, take his medication. And he wasn't mad or anything. And he just was holding a screwdriver. And in the video, it did show him going forward. Now, he could have tripped over the door or anything. I don't know. But they shot him 5 times and killed him right there. And the thing of it is that these people are trusting police. And the lady kind of walked off and... figured that they would handle it, but they killed him instead. So that whole thing to me, it kind of makes me sick, you know, to my stomach, that these men that are supposedly trained for mentally ill people, which she requested, and they said that they are trained. They were too close to him, for one, and they're just too prideful, and they got that thing going where they don't want to back down. What do you got to say, Melvin? You got that look on your face like you want to say something. Do you want to say something?
You know, my thoughts about the whole situation. I remember after the Trayvon Martin situation, a guy I've known for 30-some years, he asked me a question I think about all the time, and I couldn't answer it. He say, do you know of any incident where a black policeman have shot a young white dude? And I thought about it, and I said, wow.
Not that you heard of. But you know what I was telling Denise? There was a black cop that did shoot a Latino man unarmed, and somebody caught the whole thing on film, on a phone, and it made me sick to my stomach. The guy was down, and the cop told him to get up, and the young man, which was a veteran, said, okay, I'm getting up. And when he went to get up, he shot that guy, two times or something? You remember that? And he didn't die, though. Okay, but it just makes you sick in the stomach. Why would anybody do that? Or the white guy they just beat up in San Bernardino. Mm-hmm. They beat the crap out of that dude. And, I mean, everybody running toward him, they just got to get a kick in or get a lick in. And it's like, the guy's already on the ground surrendering. And they just beat the crap out of the man. It's like, what, you know? And that's a whole nother show, okay? I'm gonna get to the meat of this program. Okay, and that is Jewish success and black failure in America. Now, that could be taken a lot of ways, and I'm probably sure it's going to be. Okay, we're going to start off with Brad. And I mean, when I say that, what comes to mind, or what do you got on your mind about that?
Well, I think very generally sometimes, and I, you know, before looking into it, and you know, you could look at it two ways, specifically and generally. I looked at the black culture immediately, and I guess that they make up probably 10 to 11% of the country. And I never thought of it until I actually looked into it that blacks were, you know, using the word failure. You know, it's not.
This is a radio show, and I want to get people's attention. And you say failure, and some people get mad. Some people think about it. Some people say no. Some people say yeah. So, I mean, we need to talk about it and just get it out.
I would agree with that, with the failure aspect, for looking more into it. You know, with the numbers and everything. You have people like Barack Obama and Colin Powell who are, you know, who stand
Oprah.
Up. You know, I'm trying to think of who else there is.
That was it.
Well, no, then you start looking into the athletes and the musicians. You know, they're successful and wealthy.
Right, but as being an athlete, I've actually talked to some black ideologists, actually, who they don't agree that athletes are really successful in a sense. I mean, they are, you know, they make a lot of money, and but they're not good role models, I guess, is what he's trying to.
Not all of them. That's a
well, even thing. even just the ones that are even. I mean, you know, the black community sees this, according to him, his opinion is the black community sees this, and they start going other routes to make the money, you know, to achieve the same kind of success. Or
you mean trying to? I mean, the odds of someone becoming an NBA basketball player are very high. So is that what you're saying, that they're basically maybe wasting their time pursuing that goal?
No. Where that goal is unachievable and unrealistic, even for a black person, you know, but thinking that it isn't, and then going, you know, taking different routes to achieve that success, selling drugs or to, you know, or crime in other general ways.
Well, I think what some of the issues are, you have a lot of the young men that have a lot of athletic ability, so they don't have the training or the upbringing on how to handle success, how to handle money. All of a sudden, you know, they go to a good school, you know, they start with their education, but that's not really what's focused on. It's how well do you shoot that hoop, or how well can you run catching that football. And there's a lot of politics and stuff that goes on at the colleges to make sure, because they're, you know, the alumni pay the money for that, so we want to make sure that you're on a winning team. And if they get drafted into, you know, the major league, all of a sudden they got this huge amount of money coming in, but there wasn't any education on how to handle that success and how to handle that money. So when you have somebody that's a lot of times from the lower income, and all of a sudden now they're very, very wealthy, the first thing they think is, I got to buy a big house, I'm going to buy a big car, I'm going to have, you know, people over all the time doing this stuff. And they dwindle it away because they don't know how to handle the success and fame, or they get involved in things they shouldn't be.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
But it's telling, and I guess this is what his point is, that my old neighbor is telling, maybe there's a young black kid, a 16, 17-year-old kid who's got some pretty good athletic ability, and maybe he's capable at that point of maybe getting a college scholarship, but going nothing past that, you know, not being able to get that $100 million contract, or, you know. I guess that his point is that there's this, you know, aura, if you could say, around in the black community that, okay, it's either all or nothing. You know, it's not, you can go get a college degree, you can get connections through your athletic ability and, you know, get a great job. You know, even if you're not going to go to the pros and, you know.
Oh, yeah, sports. Yeah. Like if you get a degree.
Right.
People, you know, nowadays, a lot of companies won't hire you unless you have some sort of a degree.
Right.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there.
But the colleges don't, for the athletes that are there, I don't think that they promote trying to get a degree, nor do I think that the pros do either. There's too many kids that are drafted straight in, you know, in basketball. You can go straight from high school straight into the pros.
Actually, you can't anymore in the NBA. It's been, the last person that was allowed to do it was Andrew Bynum.
Oh, did they? Yeah. They switched.
But they don't have to get a college degree.
No. Actually, yeah. They only have to be at this point right now 1 year removed out of high school.
Right.
You don't even have to go to college.
So that's what I'm saying, that. To me, if you've got a degree going to a college, you should have to finish that college education. You're being paid to go there. And they shouldn't be able to draft you out of that because, you know, they're going to make the quick buck, but are you going to be able to live off of that, you know?
But see, one issue in relationship to that is how the NCAA exploit the athletes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can have a coach that can make $30 million mm-hmm. and this, the ones who create the product and all that kind of stuff
are making nothing.
Yeah, they're suffering. But getting back to the point on when you talk about athletes and entertainers, I don't see that as reflecting the black community at all.
No, what I was bringing up was that a mm-hmm. lot of money is made there. You know, which, if you want to take success as making money, that's mm-hmm. where you see. You don't. To me, I think in the proportion when you put it on down to people that are very, very wealthy, you know, you have to put a good part of that wealth comes from the entertainment and the athletes that come down through there. You know, you do have people that are in a professional field, you know, that are accountants, that are doctors and stuff, but not mm-hmm. to the same proportion as what you have for the sports.
Can you elaborate more of what you're saying about you don't believe entertainment and athletes contribute or represent the black community?
Because just look at the figures and look at what's happening. Majority of the black community is suffering, out of jobs, et cetera, like that. Mm-hmm. See, I think the beginning of the problems for the black community started with probably Brown versus the Board of Education, 1954, when they brought in integration as a concept. See, you can just look at the figures, jobs all over, crime, the number of business that the black community had, and integration was the worst thing that ever happened to the African-American community. Because, see, I think up until that time, slavery had forced our economic system to be like a plural economic system. We have a plural economic system now. When I say a plural ethnic economic system, most of you are ethnic. Everybody have a ethnic community but the African-Americans.
I know, but I mean, we've had this conversation before, but I think the reason that is because we are considered Americans. We're not considered African Americans. We were born, most of us, right here in America. We were brought up in America, doing America, following. We know the rules. We should know the Constitution. We're brought up like that. But so what you're saying is that Nigerians have a little African community over here somewhere, and they feed that community. They grow that community. Jewish people have their own little communities, and now Mexicans.
Well, let me tell you what I'm saying. No, what I'm saying is this. And one of the first person who really tapped into this was a professor at the University of Michigan named Harold Cruz. He wrote a book called Plural But Equal. It was the first book he wrote called The Crisis of the Negro Intellectual. And when he pointed out what was happening with the African-American leadership. But what he pointed out is that as far as the economic system that we live in a plural economic system, plural ethnic economic system. And what I mean by that is that every one of your ethnic communities, right, have strong communities, and then you got the overall, what I call the shopping mall community where everybody mingles, right?
General.
The only community in which the African American exists in or have any kind of impact in is that secondary community. They don't even control their own community. See, so we have to look at that. So when you can't create, what we're talking about now is black failure, Jewish success, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is a great topic, and we should examine why. Why is that? I think one of the reasons I always thought that the Jewish community was so strong is historically they've utilized the economic concept of tithing, see? Mm-hmm. And so just about every community or nation that they would go in over a period of time, they raised to the top because they tithe. They would take 10% of their income and they utilize it for the good and welfare of the rest of the Jewish community. See, now tithing didn't start with the Jewish community. It's an old ancient concept. Probably started with the Babylonians or something like
that. You really
that.
Think the Babylonians?
Yes, without a doubt. That's when you call the Babylonians by the correct name. See, Babylonians is really the Cushites. See, that's the origins of the Babylonians. And you trace them through history. Probably the origins of capitalism, Code of Hammurabi, you know, that laid it out. But what I'm saying, when we come back, and that's how come I say we trace it. We look at what happened from the Emancipation Proclamation all the way up to Brown versus Board of Education in 1954, and you look at the state of, you look at how many business we had, look at our entertainment. We had a national company. We had the Lafayette Theaters. We had movies. We had business. I mean, we didn't have the problem that we have now, unemployment. And seeing what happened with Brown versus Board of Education, we gave up that. We gave up our whole ethnic community to try to pursue a fallacy. And what is that fallacy? To merge into what we call the mainstream society. And what we don't understand, you know, the whole concept of immigration, you know, every immigrant that came over, they had an ethnic community that they built up. Mm-hmm. See, and they could exist in two communities. But when you look at the African American, we don't exist. We don't even control our own community.
Because we were here. It's like we didn't come from anywhere and have to build anything. I mean, most of us are born into poverty, and then we have to...
You got to go back a little farther than that. We created a modern capitalism with slavery because we spent almost 400 years of free labor to build up what they call
now,
modern
capitalism.
Now,
when you say capitalism. We, you're not...
Descendants of slaves, American, African American.
I know,
that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I know, but you're not talking about black people created that.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Slavery created modern
free
capitalism.
Labor. Oh, yeah. No, I know that, but we didn't create slavery.
Well, I think also what it is when...
Say it. I'm just saying that. I'm saying we were brought over here as slaves. Okay, yeah. So I mean, I'm misunderstanding you.
I'm saying,
am I misunderstanding you and saying that if we didn't do the work, then
I think Melvin's talking about more than before you came to America, because 400 years ago, the country's only 220 some years old, so it had to be before you even came to America.
I'm misunderstanding.
No, what I'm saying is that whole Atlantic slave trade created modern.
Okay, say it like that, because I wasn't understanding the other
one. Yeah, the Atlantic slave trade is free labor on the back of the descendants of the slaves of America.
Right.
And they never redressed that after after Emancipation Proclamation. Mm-hmm. African America never got no 40 acres and a mule.
We didn't get it.
No. So all I'm saying
clubs.
Right. and see... One of the things that was always a close, until recently, it was a very close relationship between the descendants of the slaves of America and the Jewish community. All the way up through the civil rights movement, they've always been close, mm-hmm. See? And it just recently, probably with the creation of Israel, what's happening over there, changed the whole dynamics of it, see? But if African-Americans were basically, if they had a culture where they could do something like tithe, then we would have be in the shape that we are
now. Not many black folks is going to be tithing, and you know that.
Well, see, we can't tithe. I think you want to say.
Well, I was going to say, tithing is not part of the Jewish religion.
Well, I mean, if you look in the Bible and even in the first five books or the first four books, Abraham tithe. Who else? So the heavy hitters tithe. It's on record in those books, and that's probably. But Melvin was saying that it was something that went on even before that. But it's recorded in the Bible, or what do you call the Quran? No, it's
the Torah.
How do you say it?
The Torah.
The Torah.
Right. The Torah.
Okay. Yeah.
But
okay.
I think also with the Jewish community was they always, which I don't see, and with the black community, the Jewish community looked after their own. You know, if there was somebody hurting, like when Melvin says, they were there to help their community.
Well, that's, how that's kind of a blanket statement. I think because there's a lot.
There's a lot of people do it, but I'm saying overall, look at a lot of the Jewish businesses and stuff like that that came in through there. You know, a lot of the Jewish businesses have Jewish people working just in their business.
Right.
You know.
Like, I came out here for a job working 15 years ago in an advertising company, and it was, the advertising company was pretty big. It was, I mean, big for at least a small business, maybe 80 people, and I think 79 of them are Jewish.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. They help, where I don't see a lot of, in the Black community, I don't see, if somebody becomes successful, I don't see them trying to grab somebody
else. It's a reason for what I just said earlier. See, number one, the main reason that you have that like that is because African-Americans, since Brown versus Board of Education, we had no leadership like what we had prior to that, you know, where that pushed us as a group phenomenon, see? And what happened, another great book, The Miseducation of the Negro by E. Franklin Frazier, by Carter G. Wilson. And he talks about that. He explains, he wrote that book in the 20s, right? And he explained that one of the major problems with the African-American community is that they started off following the concept that W.E.B. Du Bois pushed about the talented tent, which was a tied-in concept. Du Bois say, if 10% of the African descendants of slaves in America to get an education, they would reach back for the other 90 and pull them up. But Carter G. Wilson, he came out and he pointed out, and he proved to be true. He said that this 10% is going to have more in common with the mainstream society and less in common with the other 90%.
Well, and that's what I was trying to say, whereas in the Black community, I don't see them trying to pull
They're trying to move up and assimilate with the rest of the world.
Brad,
I want you to, we were kind of talking about Jewish success, and you said you did a little research, and you wanted to start from the kind of the origin or what you were, can you...
I wanted to ask him something real quick.
Ask that.
So what you're saying, I'm a huge fan of Malcolm X, actually. Very one of my favorite historical figures. Are you saying kind of what his whole mentality was before he changed, before he was murdered, was assimilation and integration, social integration are bad for the African Americans?
Yeah. Okay,
it's pretty much...
It's a fallacy.
Brad, can you talk into your...
Oh, mic, sorry,
Brad.
sorry.
Mm-hmm. You can pull it closer to you. You can pick it up if you want to.
Okay.
Yes, because I thought Malcolm was right in the sense that integration is a fallacy. You know, that since 1954 all the way up to now, the country's probably more segregated than it was then.
But he did change his tune, though, before he was assassinated.
In terms of?
He was more into assimilation, social assimilation, integration, I believe.
Well, Malcolm, when he came back from the Hajj, all he did is begin to practice Islam the right way. Mm-hmm. You know, up until the time, he had practiced as a segregated racial religion.
Black
which
Muslim.
Which was a fantasy. It had nothing to do with Islam. So Malcolm, he made it clear, right? When he broke away from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and he formed his organization, right? He said clear that, you know, that's why he created two organizations. He created an organization in which those whites that wanted to be involved in could be involved with that. But mainly, Malcolm's whole philosophy come from the philosophy of Marcus Garvey. See, because his father was a Garveyite, and he believed in controlling the economic life of your own community, creating your own jobs, your own education system.
Okay, we're going to take a break right now. All right, it's a time to look at what's going on and where you can get it going on. The best impressions at home start with Elite Furniture for affordable prices. For more information, contact Richard Boyd at 951-214-8555. Drama Stage Qumran has a weekly Veterans Theater workshop led by Melvin Ischel Johnson and Earlene Anthony. The workshop is on Wednesday nights from 4 to 6 p.m. It's a free course in stage managing, playwriting, and more. The workshop, though, has been postponed, but if you'd like more information and when it will resume, you can contact Melvin at 213-908-6567 or email them at dramastage1@yahoo.com. Positive Light is back with the kayak.
Kayak!
If you know anything about Positive Light's ministry, the history, we take children out kayaking. Inner city kids, out of city kids, everyone's welcome. The fundraiser will be on August 22nd, and the kayaking trip will be September 19th. So let's all get ready for that. We'd like to thank our engineer, Cheyenne, for helping us out. You're doing a great job. If you'd like to be part of our show through sponsorship, you can contact us at 951-789-1046. And to learn more about our organization, Positive Light Ministries, and make a donation, please visit our website, positivelight.org, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com. We are Positive Light. Also, Tech Top Retreat is the first Wednesday of every month. It's at the Vortex, and that's at 2341 East Olympic Boulevard in Los Angeles, and it's at 5:30 at night. We have a workshop, speakers, networking for Skid Row show hosts, engineers, and interns. It's a free event. Refreshments are served. If you'd like more information about that, you can also contact Melvin Johnson.
And I'd also like to congratulate Shantae Marie Duncan on her radio show. Well, I'm just going to read what she said. She says, start your morning off right by listening to Mosaic of Sound, a groovy new mix of neo-soul, indie, and R&B, and alternative, okay, with DJ Shani every Tuesday morning from 6 to 8 a.m., okay, and that you can tune in to 88.9 FM or stream online at KUCI.org. Proud of you, Shantae. She jams, too. I went to her first show, and she's a natural. I mean, Skid Row Studio. She was birthed here. And the girl's a natural. So we thank Skid Row Studios. Melvin Ishmael Johnson is the inspiration. Yes. So thank you for that. And we also are at Skid Row Studios in beautiful downtown Los Angeles. And we're going to continue our discussion now. And I believe we left off with you, Brad. You were getting into...
why we believe Jewish people are so successful in America.
Why you believe.
Well, I read a bunch of opinions, actually, in some articles. I would be prone to kind of identify with one. And they talked about, because of my cause and effect kind of mentality... kind of based upon the strict teachings of religion back thousands of years ago is kind of why people think that they're so successful in a sense. Mm-hmm. Because it has to do with, you know, learning new languages, or learning a new language, the Jewish religion. A lot of teachings of it. It's a very diverse religion. So there's a lot of education involved. And also Jewish people were not allowed to own land in the Middle East back years, you know, thousands of years ago. So this might have driven them to other forms of work, because it's pretty much 90% of all there was agriculture. So I would agree with that, you know, when it comes to the strict religious aspect of it and also being held down and not being allowed to own stuff. And they created a sub-community. And the Jewish community, or even the Jewish culture, is a lot smaller than the black culture or race, if you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. So I guess when we're looking at population of, or I guess percentages of populations of the, I'll say races, Jewish is considered white in America?
I don't think that there is an attachment, actually, because Jewish people can be of any, you know, mm-hmm. when we talked about this before, of any, you know, color or...
Well, you were saying there was two kinds of Jewish people.
There's Ashkenazic and Sephardic. And
say that one more time slow.
Ashkenazic and Sephardic.
Okay.
Sephardic means Spanish in Hebrew. And that means that you hail from Spain, but that's not necessarily true, because they're basing that upon the Inquisition, which happened in, I believe, the 16th century. So they're labeling a certain group of people You know, and they, but they scattered everywhere after that point, and they're not just necessarily, you know, half my family is Sephardic, but I'm not Spanish. You know, I'm not, maybe my origin or, you know, some of my descendants are, but I don't feel Spanish.
Well, I think, though, if you were to, looking across the room right here, I'm going to say there's two black men and there's a white man sitting there. I mean, just because, you know, you can't tell by the skin color what your heritage may or may not be. You could, you know, you could be German or, you know, but just looking at you or something.
And how does that translate into American success, you think? And I know you're saying the background, and you're basically saying hard work.
Pretty much, you know, is kind of what I, yeah, I mean, but also
a strong family.
I'm sure family has a lot to do with it. It's not, you know, Jewish people are, they're not, you know, their divorce rate is very low. You know, they're very family oriented. But I didn't get, Ashkenazic is meaning Europe. I wanted to touch back on this real quick.
Go ahead.
Because I know you've told me about some other people's beliefs when it comes to Jewish people and their ethnic background. There's Ashkenazic and Sephardic, but yet there's a lot of black Jews, you know, that look just like you or Melvin. But there's no name for them, you know, ethnic-wise. They're
that's
just
jacked up.
Right. There's no, you know, they're just black Jews. They're not Ashkenazic or Sephardic. How do you, you know, how do you label them, you know?
What is that?
Well, they call them
the Falashians.
Falashians. They could call them the Falashians. The Falashians, the black Jews. But what happened, see, to me to understand this concept, you have to go all the way back to the historian Flavius Josephus.
With the temple being destroyed.
Right. And when he talked about...
Wait a second. What did you just say?
The second temple being destroyed, I believe, in
71 AD.
After Christ. Yeah.
71 AD.
70 AD,
okay. When it destroyed it. But you had, because at that particular time, you had a struggle between the Romans. And Romans had conquered the world all everywhere but Judea. And when they came in Judea, because, you know, Rome being a polytheistic entity and Judea being a monotheistic entity, they rebelled. You know, and they rebelled. Even before that, they rebelled with the Maccabees, heading up to that period. But what happened, that first war, 66 A.D. to 73 A.D., right? And then you had a secondary war, 132 A.D. to 135 A.D., the Bar Kabbar Rebellion, what they call that. But what happened is when most of the Jews was dispersed, across a lot of the colonies in which the Rome had. And one of the major colonies that Rome had was in Germany. You know, they had conquered the German tribes by then. And a lot of the Jews went in there because Rome, when they conquered Judea, right, they kept the females, sent the males away as slaves. So they go into Germany, and over a period of time, that's really how the Yiddish language developed. It was a combination of German and the Hebrew dialect or whatever over that period of time. Now, that's an important part of that history because that's past what had happened with the Messiah of Jesus time period. But you did have... The whole and you when you look at the Messiah Jesus, you can't view him in relationship to anything called Christianity because it didn't exist during that time. Jesus, right. His religion was Judaism, as you want to call that, and it went into two directions. You know, it went into North Africa, right? Went into that, and the reason for that is because you could say the teachings of the Apostle Paul. And the teachings of the original disciples that went into the North African portion of it. Now, all the way up until the 1930s, you know, the Jewish people became a dominant power, the ruling power in Germany, probably the most technical nation of that particular time. And, you know, there's a lot of jealousies that caused all of that madness to
even
retake
all over Europe, even especially in Germany, but all over Europe.
Yeah,
right. Vienna.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah.
And as I mentioned earlier, the reason is because they held part of their culture was an economic concept of tithes. You know, where everybody else was practicing tribalism, all kind of selfish economic exploitation. See, but the Jewish people, they stood, they their religious system that was tied into it, not only did it allow them to exist, but it allowed them to rise to the top of the economic system. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what I was pointing out, getting all the way back to, and I wish we had had a chance to touch on the Malcolm X thing, because see, Malcolm X, a lot of people say Malcolm X was a racist, but Malcolm X, what they were talking about is controlling the economic life of your community, creating your own jobs, creating your own universities, you know, taking care of your own. And that's it has nothing to do with
racism,
color or whatever.
I know, but what I'm saying is at the time they were saying that they didn't want or allow any white people to come into that zone. They like
who?
Malcolm X or the black Muslims.
And what that's zone? Why they didn't, what zone did they control?
You're talking about a community.
Yeah, but that was, you're talking about that was the Nation of Islam on the Muhammad and Elijah.
Okay, but that wasn't Malcolm X.
Malcolm,
I mean,
he broke
let
from
white
that.
People. I know, but
well,
you're
that
like
was
that.
After Malcolm went on his mission to Mecca or whatever yeah. and came okay. back. He found out that what the Islam teachings were here yeah. was not what okay. was actually going yeah. on in the motherland.
Okay, right, because he saw people of all races and colors.
All races. Mm-hmm. Islam okay. not based upon okay, the Lee, color of a person.
You got
skin.
Something to say, Lee?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One, I want to ask a question. Would you allow your son to go to a strip joint in the middle of the, you know, the night? A 10-year-old kid, would you let him go to a strip joint in the middle of the night?
No, I would not.
I wouldn't either. So you have to segregate yourself from everybody else, because you guys are people just come out of slavery, man. They wasn't that long ago. They don't know how to operate yet. This is what Daniel Elijah Muhammad wanted to do. He wanted to separate them so they could get them in the right frame of mind so they can go forward.
Well, I mean, that's one way of saying it, calling them white devils and preaching that hatred, that I mean, I understand what you're saying, and it's valid, but that's not what he was doing. He was teaching okay. hatred.
Now, let me put it some other way.
Okay.
In every household, especially a black household you went into in America, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. There was a man called Jesus on the wall. What color was he?
He was white with okay, blonde yeah. hair
now,
and blue eyes.
Now, let me say it right here, right? So mm-hmm. you got to get out of a mentality, man, because some people just believe, you know what? I sit around people sometimes, and these black people, right? And I notice some strange things about them. The one thing they hate so much that they hate, they're not white, and they're black. They would love to be white, you know, in this society.
I mean, but they have so much fun. I remember when I was watching Elvis when I was just a little kid.
Well, I think
I'm being silly.
What Lee is saying, though, I think mm-hmm. that once they went through where they said we're going to get rid of segregation, people just thought that it was going to be like, okay, now we're all equal.
Yeah.
Not only just equal to go and do things, equal social economically, equal for a lot of things. And
it didn't happen
like that. That's, you know, and that was the misconception on a lot of the black folk that were coming up, or just like
but
we said,
but
slavery
how long does
ending.
It take?
Okay.
How long does now, it take for you to figure well, out it's through, not that way?
You go through Ronald Reagan to Bush, right? The one thing that the black folks was able to count on is some kind of a job, something to do. You know, you got to give him something to work with, right?
Serious.
So what happened to affirmative action? And that's when your downfall came, because now everybody's on the community tip, their own community. Like the brother said, Jewish people got their community. The Ethiopians got their community. The Latinos got their community. The Asians got their community, right? Mm-hmm. But the black folks don't have no community. They don't even have a job. And because of that right there, they don't have a job. Now people can, because I'm for myself and my family, right? Mm-hmm. They are first. The white family's first, their family. The Latinos first with their family. If I got anything else, if I throw you, I throw you a bone. You know what I'm saying? I throw you a bone.
Uh-huh. But and then one other thing that I would like to say, and I want to get back to the point of what happened after slavery. See, one of the things that happened after slavery, because you had discrimination against the descendants of slaves in America, and also discrimination against the Jewish American, yeah. it kind of pushed them to work together as a unit.
And I guess that's kind of what the title is kind of, you know, it's like Jews, everybody hates Jews, everybody hates blacks. And that's kind of, you know, what makes us so different where they're hated and they are hated and you know they are.
Well, I don't.
You don't think they are?
I don't think.
You don't think the Jews are hated? Come on, talk to me.
By who?
By everybody.
You don't. In our community hate.
You don't hate them.
I mean, everybody but you, because I know I don't like them.
It's probably
300 million people in the United States, 350, yeah. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm willing to bet you if you poll the Americans, you're lucky if you found 2 or 3 million people that's going to say, what, I hate Jewish people?
Actually,
how can they say they hate Jewish people when everybody running around here with a Bible that's based upon the whole culture of the Jewish
people? But you say everybody, but nobody, people are carrying that book. They don't know what's in it, Melvin, and you know that's right.
Well, look at Barack Obama's old pastor when he was living in Illinois as a senator. Washington. What was that fellow's name?
Washington.
Jeremiah Washington.
Chicago.
He preached the opposite of what the Bible says, and he was preaching Israel as a terrorist state, not to support them.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to America as a terrorist state. Also, he classified as he Obama was going to that church for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
But see, here's where probably the only modern person out here that's willing to discuss Israel and put them in a proper perspective, and I think because he loved Israel, to me, was Jimmy Carter. When Jimmy Carter said that Israel is practicing apartheid, wait a minute now, who can argue with that? By the definition of what South Africa was doing with the majority population in South Africa, and then you had the same thing that happened in Israel. See, okay. Now whether or not what Jeremiah Wright said, but when you look at what's happening in Israel today, and I think the worst thing that happened to Israel was the re-election of Netanyahu.
Just recently?
Because see, when you go all the way back to 1947, November 1946, when the UN, gave a mandate to that particular area to create an Israeli state and a Palestinian state. The one who I thought made the mistake was not the Israeli people. They had fought to get that. It was the Palestinians that turned down the Palestinian state then. So don't come up with no argument now for the Palestinians.
They turned it down in 98 also. Down.
Okay. So what I'm saying is that when they saying how they define terror, see, and I look at it in a whole different way.
I understand, but I think we're getting kind of off base. We're getting into something totally different. And if you could expound on Jewish success in America. Okay, you said basically hard work, but can you get back to that? And you said you did a little research, but I just want to hear your beliefs. And what Melvin is saying is valid. Okay, about black, and I mean, the man is an encyclopedia of knowledge.
We can touch on that later.
But I just want to hear from you what you believe in America, Jewish success is.
Well, exactly what we were talking about before a few minutes ago about not grabbing your own and, using them or helping them out. And Jewish people are very big on that. I grew up in a very, very, very Jewish community. If I would have taken whatever route I wanted to take in life, if I wanted to become a lawyer, I could have went to law school, made a phone call, and had a job. I mean, of course, I'm being... it's about helping your own out, I guess you could say, at this point now. But what Melvin was talking about was he shares the opinion of a lot of people when it comes to the temple being destroyed. That supposedly set things in motion for Jewish people, because they were forced to become self-educated and, it made them stronger. And
okay, now you know that Jesus Christ predicted or prophesied that happening 70 years before it happened. Do you know that?
Yes.
If you don't, just say
No, I do know that, actually. Okay. But
70 years before it happened.
I believe that was written only maybe 10 to 20 years before the temple was destroyed, no?
Yeah, because we got to look at the Gospels. The very first Gospel, I said that, but I'm saying that because prophecy
is from God. When it happens like that, it's from God. Go back. I didn't mean to break that flow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree with what you said, or what Melvin said also, mm-hmm. about, and grabbing,
stronger, the second...
Family, more, stronger family, orientation, you know, emphasizing education. Like I was had to go to college. There was no, you know, don't do
always
about
it. Wasn't an option.
Well, it was an option. I'm free at 18, but even the way I saw it, it wasn't an option. It wasn't an option for me. I felt like I had to, or I wasn't going to have any weapons in this world, you know.
Which and that's probably something that was instilled in you from an early age, even if you didn't understand why you felt that way. But
it was, but not just also at home, but from my, you know, the community.
Okay, and that's what Melvin is saying. We're getting back to that community thing again. It's like, so Jewish success, in my opinion, comes from a strong foundation from family and good ethics and working hard.
At this point right now, yes. I mean, we could, you know, yes.
Okay, would you like to elaborate on anything other than that? Or
No, not at this second.
Well, I think I was doing some research on the Black culture. And one of the things that kind of hit me as strange when you had me looking to see about the number of Blacks that are incarcerated.
Incarcerated. Okay.
You know. One in three Black men, it's projected, are going to be in jail sometime during their lifetime. You know, growing up, you know, in a white middle-class neighborhood, jail wasn't even something we talked about. It was like, you know, I never thought that anybody I knew would ever be in jail. It just wasn't something that was there. But when I started looking at some of the stats of what was out there, it said in 2010, all Black men were 6 times as likely as white to be in jail. So, I mean, it's got a strike against you right there. It said people of color, and that takes up, you know, the Hispanic, Asian, anybody outside of white, make up 30% of the population, but 60% of the incarcerated people.
Incarcerated. Mm-hmm.
Then in 2010 again, 1 in 5 Black men make up what's in jail. 1 in 36 are Hispanic, and 1 in 106 are white. So, you know, you start looking at the stats.
Well, right. And see, those are just the results of, you know, the cause and effects concept. Mm-hmm. And to me, it goes all the way back to what I said earlier about controlling the economic life of your own community. Starting in 1954, right, our leaders, when they accepted, right, when they accept integration as a concept, right, that was the downfall of our people because it's a fallacy. It don't exist.
Yeah, but
it
also set the point for laws,
side.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it also set the way for you know, laws of equality. If that didn't happen, there would be no laws of equality.
Well, the bottom line is that when you look at before then, and you have to ask the question, the major Supreme Court before then was Plessy versus Ferguson, you know, 1898, that brought in the separate but equal doctrine that they lived in all the way up until that time period. Now, I'm not saying that Brown versus Board of Education was a bad decision, but what I'm saying is that the so-called false leadership of the African-American community went in the wrong direction. Right, because they viewed society as equality. Now equality as a whole, and then we turn around and we gave up all of our. We to integrate into a mainstream society means that you give up your leadership that you have. We gave up our. We had the baseball team. We had the movies. We had the jobs. We had the business. We had all of that, and we gave up to integrate. And look at the conflict that we caused by trying to go into other people's community. And thinking it's their job to provide jobs for us.
I know. I understand that, and trying to move into white neighborhoods, and they don't want you there, and that whole thing, and it's crazy. Okay, but why do you think if we had those things? Okay, we had baseball teams. Okay, now we had a conversation about that. I mean, Black people are gifted athletes, and the money that the Dodgers made signing.
Well, see, you're looking at what's on the floor, because see, when you look at the NBA and all that kind of stuff like that, see, that's the whole misconception. You know, you got 99% African Americans out there playing basketball, and then you got one owner up there that's reaping all of the profits.
I understand what you're saying, but
so
what I'm saying,
the issue is not the people on the floor, it's controlling the economics that come from this particular product. Who controls that and utilize that for the community? Donald Sterling that owned the Clippers, you know, he got a basically black basketball team. The resources that he make from that, do he utilize that for the black community or his own community up in Hollywood, Beverly Hills, where he live at? See, all that's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Who controls the economic life of that community?
I understand that, but what I'm saying is that you have, say, back in the day, a black baseball team.
Yeah.
Okay, so when the best players got drafted to go to white teams, you still had black baseball teams.
No, you're saying,
but you're just saying for some reason they just up and ran away.
Well, I don't think there was money
Let me say this, because I think, okay, when you got the black baseball team, you got more than just the people on the field, right? You got the people selling the hot dogs. You got the people that created other businesses right there.
I understand
when
that.
They took Jackie Robinson, right, mm-hmm. and put him in the mainstream, that's the worst thing that happened to the black community, because not only did it destroy the Negro League, but all of those other business that was tied into that insurance company.
So every last single person start watching the Dodgers. Because there was one black man on there,
huh?
Well, you understand what I'm saying?
But I think what the problem comes down.
Say that again. The other team, the Dodgers wasn't the only baseball team.
Yeah, I know. And black people didn't watch baseball before Jackie Robinson got drafted.
What I'm saying is,
you're saying that just because blacks integrated to white sports. Black people just up and dropped everything they owned, they believed in, and what they had, just because they're integrated now. And see, that just sounds a little far-fetched to me.
I'm just saying, you got to do is look at the history, look at the documents there. When Jackie Robinson went into the league, that opened the door, right, for all the other little stars. That same thing is happening now. They went there, and that destroyed... not only did it destroy the baseball teams and the basketball teams and all of that, but it destroyed the culture that we had. We had our own theater company.
I know, but did we have the money? Did we have the money to keep those things up and running? But why did Jackie Robinson go to the Dodgers? Why? I mean, number one reason, why do you think he went to the Dodgers?
Because Ricky, he developed the tactics. He understood. He just wanted to develop that concept. You know, he understood by opening doors.
Where did Jackie Robinson move to? And where did he take his money after he moved into the white team? He didn't take it back into the community.
Jackie Robinson was, because he was more of a community man.
How many athletes do you see now take their money?
Not many, very few.
And see, that's to me more of what a problem is.
And that's what I'm saying.
You know,
that's exactly what I'm saying.
You know, it's like I made mine. The heck with you all. Yeah.
Okay, let's wind down.
Thing.
We got to wind down now, but a very good conversation. I think we're going to probably try to come back next week and finish this thing up if you're available, Melvin. When we'll talk about solutions. What you giggling about over there?
Because I'm going to be here. They sure.
Okay, any last comments? We only got a minute.
I had a question before I forget.
Go ahead.
Do you, especially for you, do you think that there's a difference in prejudice between, you know, somebody's prejudice between blacks and Jews? Is there a difference? Coming from the person, no? Because some people believe that disliking Jewish people is a little different. It's claiming more bitterness. I guess you could say.
Because, see, well, you know, one major trait about the descendants of slaves of America is all the stuff that happened in slavery. Our ancestors did not teach us to hate.
Not all of us.
Yeah. I mean, the huge majority of them, right. You know, they don't have that hate. And it's not a part of our makeup.
I'm going to go ahead and wind it down. Since we have seconds, I need to say, we are never more like our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ than when we are loving, forgiving, and creating.